going on, everybody? This is Nico, and you are listening to yet another edition of your favorite podcast in the whole wide world. This is the Nico Show for Tuesday, March 24th, 2020. What's going on? Live from quarantine. We're here socially isolating, sheltering in place. Connecticut just went into effect last night, as a matter of fact. We are on hour 15 or so of total lockdown here in the tri-state area because, of course, we are in the midst of the corona pandemic. My corona. Boo, boo, doo, 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 doo. My corona. I've been doing that for 2 weeks. Am I the first person to make that joke? There's no way. There must be like 10,000 song parodies already of the song My Sharona with the lyrics My Corona. Has to be, right? I mean, all I know is every morning for the past 2 weeks, I've woken up, realized that I am in the midst of the greatest crisis of my lifetime, and I just sing that song to myself, and it makes me laugh. Every morning, without fail, I giggle to myself. How'd you think that went up, Nico? Did you stumble upon it on TikTok? Bro, if I gotta see one more TikTok, I don't mean to get too off topic, but my God, what is up with the TikToks, people? Settle the hell down. I don't even know what TikTok is. I mean, I know what it is. I've seen the app. My sister has the app because, you know, she's a member of Generation Z. So the other day she says, Nico, let's make a TikTok. And I didn't know what she meant by that. Like, I don't know what goes into making a TikTok. I've seen the app. I know that kids like it. Kids are on it. And I've seen all the dancing videos and I've seen the music. And apparently this app used to be called Musical.ly and it got bought out by China. And I think now the Chinese government owns this app and they're using it to spy on people. Or at least that's what I read on Infowars.com. I don't know what this app is, but my sister's using it and people are making them and they're really starting to piss me off. I asked Nick Evangelista about this the other day. I go, what's the point of TikTok? What's the draw? Right? Because I get Facebook is for closed circles. You can talk to your grandmother. You can talk to your aunts and uncles. That's Facebook, right? Instagram for photos. It's a visual medium. It has good camera filters. And then you go on Twitter. It's microblogging, quick news bits. Quick thoughts on particular things. It's a global community of news and tidbits. TikTok is what? Vine with like iTunes song samples? That's what it is, right? Seriously, I asked Nick. He had no good answer for me. And his job, his career, Nick Evangelista, is social media manager. It is his job to understand how various social networks work. And he had no good answer for me. He goes, I think like you create a video and you put it side by side with another video. And it's meant to be like a way to share memes. And we sounded like we were 55 as we had this conversation the other day. What in God's name is a TikTok? Telling you, back in my day, we called it a Vine, and I was the only person on Vine. It was me and Will Sasso and no one else, and you let Vine die on the cross, die for our sins, so TikTok could rise from the grave. A sacrificial lamb. How dare you let Vine get slaughtered by those savages, only for TikTok to rise in its place. Unbelievable. You know, you look back at some of the great tragedies in American history. Like, let's take World War II, for example. World War II, a pretty bad thing. Lots of people died all over the place. It was a bad time to be a human being on Earth during World War II, right? At least World War II pulled us out of the Depression. At least World War II spurred an economic boom. There was a silver lining to World War II. What is the silver lining to the coronavirus? That we now have an excess of TikToks? Like, where is the great art that's going to come as a result of this? Is someone going to write the great American novel while in isolation? Is someone going to write the next great film, motion picture? Is someone going to paint a masterpiece to be hung in the Louvre? Or are we just going to be stuck with a surplus of TikToks? Because that's what it feels like to me. Unbelievable. There's going to be no silver lining from this tragedy. It's just going to be dead grandparents and TikToks. I am sick of it. Man, am I stirring panic? Am I using my platform to sound the alarm like the mainstream media this week? Man, I just cannot believe how big this story has become. I did not see this coming. I suppose none of us saw this coming. If we had seen this coming, it would not have happened. It's one of those types of events. It is, I think, the biggest story of my lifetime. 2020, I believe, is going to be the craziest year of my life, and I don't think it's close. It's certainly the craziest year of my life so far. The only thing that you can put up there is 9/11. But 9/11 was a one-day thing, and it was a tragic day, and I think all the panic and the uncertainty was confined to that one day, and then the rest was just fallout. And it was, you know, it wasn't a slow trickle of new information and panic and hysteria like this thing is. This is just a multi-month insane event with no end in sight. And I was one of those idiots. I think I did a Two Cents 2 weeks ago with Rob, and we talked about Corona. Again, this was 2 weeks ago, the weekend before the NBA canceled and Tom Hanks got it and Trump shut down travel. But the weekend before, I was like, the media is obviously blowing this out of proportion because pays the bills, gets the eyeballs to the television screens. No way this is going to become a serious thing. And here we are now. And it is the most significant thing that I have ever seen, and perhaps I will ever see. Crazy. Crazy, dude. I think this is going to be bigger than 9/11. I really think so. I think when all is said and done, when the history books are written, this event will be more significant on a financial level, on an international level, foreign policy. All that stuff is going to forever change because of this single event. And, in one respect, it's really cool because we get to watch it unfold, and it's cool seeing history unfold in front of you, and it's cool speculating about what the history books are going to write, but it is also one of the most devastating cultural events I think we're ever going to go through. And it's not just because of the health crisis, obviously. It's also because of the economic crisis. I mean, I have two parents who are still working. My mom works retail. My dad is a small business owner. Both are directly suffering because of this. My mom is out of work for at least 2 weeks, could be longer, without pay. My dad obviously has seen business decline over the past 2 weeks because people just don't want to leave the house. So, I'm seeing it firsthand. And I do think that the economic fallout from this is going to be more significant on a global level than the health crisis. And that doesn't mean that you give one precedent over the other. It doesn't mean that everybody goes back to work, grandmothers and grandfathers be damned, because we got to get the economy going again. But you also got to keep in mind that 3 months of the economy just shutting down is unprecedented. And it's like not built for this. We are not built to endure this. Some countries aren't built to endure this. And there's a give and take there, right? It's a double-edged sword. You sacrifice some civil liberties, you sacrifice some economic freedoms, and the government can now take care of you. It's all self-sufficient. I think that's why South Korea is doing so well. South Korea does not have the civil liberties that we do in this country, that we value in this country. And you look at all the countries that have dealt with this crisis effectively, they are generally speaking countries that that are not the most free. They're not the most free. So, obviously, double-edged sword, and here we are, and Congress is arguing about it. And I guess today, we have moved into the, do we kill grandmothers and grandfathers to get the stock market back up? That's what we're doing today, right? Dude, I can't believe this. What the hell is happening? You know, for a while there, we were all getting along. You had me fooled, Congress. I'll give it to you. You had me fooled. Consider this like the ending of a Scooby-Doo episode. You know when you watch Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Great theme song. You watch Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And there was some zombie Frankenstein monster that was like harassing a neighborhood. And Fred ended up catching the monster and tying him up. Always with rope. They never had handcuffs in Scooby-Doo. It was always primitive forms of detainment. So you wrapped up the guy in your trap, in your booby trap, and you pulled the mask off, and there he is. It's Old Man Jenkins, who was mad because the local kids are messing with his cattle. You know? Old Man Jenkins, what were you doing murdering the schoolboy? That's what happened this week. I'm watching this version of Congress, and they're all getting along. Bipartisanship is a word that's thrown around a lot in D.C., but this week it seemed like they were taking it to heart. There was legitimate bipartisanship happening in Congress. They passed two relief bills, two relief plans with little to no dissent. Rand Paul, the only no vote on the first bill, obviously, is the first to get coronavirus. I'm not going to get into that. But very little dissent on either side of the aisle. Trump is suggesting policy. Congress is passing that policy on a bipartisan basis. And it's all well and good. It really goes to show that in times of need, in times of crisis, human beings are capable of unbelievable selflessness. But then we pulled the mask off. And wouldn't you know it, that pirate ghost ain't a pirate ghost after all. It's just Old Man Jenkins. There you are, Congress. Man, you had me worried sick. You haven't been yourself lately. I mean, for a second there, I thought you would never bicker with one another ever again. That you would put the dick measuring behind you. And I just couldn't have it. But then this week, you reassured me. Thank God you're back to your old selves. Giving your billionaire donors slush funds. Sneaking in random policy addendums to unrelated bills. Keeping money out of the hands of the American people. You know, I was really beginning to worry that you had turned a new leaf. But in times of crisis, yes, selfish people still going to be selfish. I cannot believe we're still doing this. I cannot believe we're still playing this game. I mean, I guess I can believe it. I just don't want to believe it. I don't want to believe that in times of crisis, we're still going to name call the other side. We're still going to point the finger. We're still going to have these stupid red versus blue debates. It's ridiculous. What else do you have to see? If you're a Democrat, Republican, red, blue, I don't care who you voted for, conservative, liberal, somewhere in between. Like, I don't know what else you have to see. Those in positions of power, those in American government, are the worst of us. They are not the best of us. They are not the most selfless. They are not those most committed to public service. They are, without exception, the biggest narcissists and the most selfish people. Without exception. Every single time when we need them, they let us down. When we need them, they continue to name call. When we need them, they continue to play their games, sneak in their little pet projects to the stimulus package, give money to the donors. What the hell? Like, I get it. I follow politics more than the average bear, and I vote in every election, and I, at times, dabble in idealism. But it is moments like this that convince me otherwise. It is moments like this that cause some self-reflection. And you look at these people who are not directly affected. They're still getting a paycheck. They are totally fine. Most of them are not sick. Most of them will not know anyone that will get sick. And none of them will lose their jobs because of this. And they're using it as an opportunity to sneak in policy, to sneak in greenhouse funding. Do you see this? I mean, look, I'm not taking anybody's side. I just want them to get their shit together and send out checks so people don't starve. Because I think like that's a pretty reasonable thing to do. I'm fairly conservative economically, but in times of crisis, that all goes out the window. Like, we need to pay people so they don't starve. We need to pay people so they don't become homeless. Everyone's a socialist now. I get, like, just pass the damn bill. So I'm not blaming either side. But I saw yesterday, the Democrats are trying to sneak in policy. They're trying to sneak in the little pet projects. They want funding for windmills. They want voter registration reform. Like, what does this have to do with the stimulus package? What does this have to do with Corona? And then you got the right, who has, leaving in these loopholes for their billionaire friends. So they can just take relief money in the form of a loan that they don't have to pay back. I don't understand how that's a loan. How can you call that a loan? How can you call these stimulus packages loans? If you don't have to pay them back, they are gifts. If you loan me $1,000 and a month from now forgive the debt, that is a gift. That is not a loan. That is cash money. So all these loopholes remain in the bill where a billionaire CEO. So here's, this is a great example. My father laid this out for me yesterday, and I thought this was perfectly put, because he's like, because he's mostly a conservative as well. He votes red, lifelong Republican, whatever. He's like, you know, I got to agree with the Democrats on this, because I can only speak to what I would do if the bill was passed in its current form as a small business owner. What I would do is I would hire every member of my family right away, because the bill doesn't call for any transparency. So I'll hire you, and I'll hire your two siblings, and I'll hire my wife, and I'll hire my parents, and I'll hire my cousins, and I'll just have a payroll of 50 people. And I'm going to get payroll money for all of those people. And I'm not actually going to give them that money. I'm just going to hang on to the money for myself. Because you have no way of proving that those funds were allocated for those specific people. And you have no way of questioning what I'm using the money for. And I'm like, yeah, you got a point there. Spoken like someone that will truly color outside the lines in order to earn a quick buck. So take that on the national level. Take that with Jeff Bezos. Now Jeff Bezos is entitled to some loans. There's nothing in there. There's no provision to guarantee that the money is going to go directly to the American people. So, like, I don't know, man. Just write the damn bill where everybody gets $1,000, $2,000. Pick a random amount that makes under $75,000 a year and just give us money. Don't worry about the business component. Don't worry about the business loans. Dude, I don't know. I'm not Steve Mnuchin. I have no idea. It's just crazy to me. It's crazy to me that we're arguing about this this Wuhan virus rhetoric. That we're arguing about, like, what you're supposed to call the virus. And Trump is out there, like, going out of his way to call it the Chinese virus. And we're having a stupid debate about vocabulary. Like, who the fuck cares? We're arguing about that. And now today we're arguing about, like, getting the economy going again and just sacrificing a couple grandmas. Dude, what? What are we doing? For a while there, this was actually encouraging for about a week. And I'll remember this week fondly. From last Wednesday to this Wednesday, I remember this as a time of great unity, solidarity, man helping fellow man. You see all these Twitter threads of people donating money to those that have lost their jobs. And it's a great thing. Congress is getting along. Trump is, for the most part, on his best behavior. Everyone is fairly happy with how Trump handled the situation. Doctors are doing God's work. Like, all this stuff is a great display of American unity. And we couldn't help ourselves. After a week, we've been home for a week, and we're already back to fighting. We got antsy because we can't help it. It is in our nature. And it is in the nature of those elected to public office. The political process does not reward the idealists. It does not reward the virtuous. Does not reward the best of us. It rewards these clowns. I cannot believe they haven't passed this shit yet. It's unbelievable to me. It's crazy. Everybody agrees. Just send the checks. You have bipartisan support. This is what everybody wants. Send the damn checks. My Lord. Anyway, are you bored? Watching too many TikToks? What's up? I will say this. I am well positioned to thrive in this social isolation. I am well positioned to continue on business as usual because my job is professional podcaster. And when that's your job, the coronavirus ain't going to change all that much. I actually think I have left the house. This is going to sound insane, but I think it's true. I have left the house more in the past week than I do on an average week without the coronavirus. And that's because I've been doing this thing called Instacart. I just started this like 3 weeks ago. I signed up Instacart personal shopping because, again, my job is professional podcaster. And wouldn't you know it, not paying the bills. And your boy's got some student loans to pay off. Got to do what you got to do. Got to hustle out there. So I downloaded this app called Instacart, and it doesn't pay well. It's like personal shopping, right? You go out and you buy people's groceries and you deliver it to their house, and it's basically Uber Eats on steroids or Postmates. It's one of those like gig shopping apps. So I signed up for this like 3 weeks ago, and you turn on the alerts for the app, and it gives you an alert that somebody needs groceries down the street. So go to Stop and Shop and pick up this and this and this. And so you go through the app, and you maybe, if you're lucky on a good day, you maybe get like 4 to 5 deliveries. And that's what I was doing, like maybe 3 or 4 deliveries every couple of days in between the podcast, in between when I'm doing other shit, because the last thing I want is a 9-to-5 job that I would not enjoy. So I've been doing this here and there, putting a little money to the side, but not good money, until this week. And wouldn't you know it, Nico has stumbled into the only industry that is thriving right now. Somehow, I have stumbled into the hottest commodity, with the exception of, I guess, hand sanitizer. I guess big hand sanitizer is doing well right now. Charmin toilet paper doing well right now. Netflix doing well right now. Instacart doing very well right now. You go on this app and it is just an endless stream of people in need of groceries. And they are paying serious money now. Like, I'm making on some of these things like $40 an hour to just go to the store, do some grocery shopping, and be put in harm's way. So I've been going out doing a bunch of these a day, just grinding out. So I'm like not as bored as the average person. It's been quite the experience. Is it possible that I have the coronavirus? Of course it's possible I have the coronavirus. In fact, I would put the odds at least 40%. I mean, I feel fine. The throat is okay. No fever, no aches, no tiredness. But I've been touching like hella loaves of bread this week. I have laid my filthy paws on more bananas than you can count. So yeah, I mean, I might be a silent carrier. I don't know. I think it's chivalrous, you know? I think it's chivalrous. I'm going out there, fighting the good fight, picking up groceries for some old ladies, taking the bullet so they don't have to. And I'm also getting paid pretty well. So it's been good. It's been a pretty interesting experience, this grocery shopping thing. I will say I have become the best grocery shopper in the world over the past 3 weeks. I know the layout of every grocery store, and I know like housewives are probably snickering at me because they've been doing this for 20 years. Or in the case of my father, he is like the housewife of this family. He's been doing the grocery shopping for 20 years almost every day. But I'm just getting like really efficient at this. And I go through the list of items, and I play this game with myself where I try to guess the demographics of the person on the other side of the app. Because, like, they give you a name, but they don't give you, like, a picture or anything else. They don't give you any identifying information about the person other than the name. I think it's, like, first name and last initial. So I go around and I look at the items, and I, like, try to guess the age range of the person. Is this an old lady, young lady? Do they have kids? How many kids do they have? Is it a man? Sometimes I try to guess the race based on how many foreign foods are being purchased. That's where it gets a little offensive. And that's why I play it in my own head. And I don't share this with anybody except for you, the podcast listener. But I've become very good at this. And I've become very good at identifying somebody's identity based on their grocery shopping habits. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they get a lot of, like, wafers, vanilla wafers, or, like, Entenmann bread, or like, those pastries, it's almost always an old lady. Almost always. They love dry foods. They love biscuits and wafers and cookies. Very rarely is booze involved in their orders. If you're a mom, generally a lot of applesauce, a lot of yogurts. Oh, yogurts is a big one. Yogurts tells you how fat or skinny the person is, depending on how many yogurts there are, and depending on if it's Greek yogurt or not. Because there are some people that just order tons of ice cream and no yogurt. Really, you can learn a lot about someone based on their dairy. Dairy? Yeah, dairy is just as valuable as, like, blood type. What someone chooses to eat in their refrigerator. It's like that old cliche about digging through someone's medicine cabinet if you start dating them for the first time to learn something about them. Learn if they have any STDs they haven't told you about. If they have any rashes that need some ointment. You can learn a lot by going through someone's medicine cabinet. I'm telling you, grocery shopping for other people has given me a glimpse into a part of humanity that I was not aware of. It's been really fun. And I'm enjoying it, you know? I put my headphones on, I go around the grocery store, I get a sense of, like, the panic. I mean, again, I don't want to make light of this, because obviously it's a horrible thing going on, and, you know, people are suffering, and I see it firsthand. I understand that people are suffering, and people are dying because of this. We're up to, like, 600 deaths today. But, like, seeing panic is also really fun. Crisis is really fun to be a part of. Seeing people going out there, raiding the toilet paper shelf, raiding the meats, seeing grocery stores have to limit certain items, just getting a sense of the ether, a sense of the zeitgeist, I find that fun. I like being involved in the action. That's why I, you know, do podcasts, because I like being involved with things. I like commenting on current events. Like, that's just fun. It's fun being a part of something. So, like, just being out during this, although dangerous, and although I would recommend that you stay home for the good of humanity, please stay home. Being out there in the midst of this, being on the front lines, has been very informative and very interesting. There are some days where it's just, like, crowded at the grocery store, and there are other days where it's totally empty, and I can't seem to find a rhyme or reason for this. Yeah, it's quite insane. Just going out there, seeing people with masks on and latex gloves, just going to Aldi's and wearing gloves. It's insane. It's insane. It's like that shit that we used to see when H1N1 was happening or Ebola was happening, and they would show airports in Asia, right? Or some other country. I know Asia is not a country. Asia is a continent, but you get my drift. But they would show that footage of people at airports just wearing those masks. And you're like, wow, imagine if that happened here. Well, now it's happening here. And we're staying home. We're in lockdown. There's nothing for me to do. Even if I wanted to do something, there's nothing for me to do. I can't get a haircut. Can't go to the restaurant. Can't go to the bar. Can't play golf. For a while there, golf was like the last pillar of society. At least here in Connecticut, golf was the only thing that people were allowed to do. And, like, a buddy of mine was golfing every day for the past week, because you can social distance on the golf course. Just don't touch the flag on the tee, or the flag in the hole. Now, yeah, none of that. It's all gone. It's an insane reality. It's really crazy, guys. The grandkids are going to love this story, by the way. Oh, the grandkids are going to go crazy about this. They're going to be asking me, you were alive during Corona? What did you do all week? I'll be like, well, I watched a lot of TikToks. And they'll go, what's a TikTok? And I'll be like, it's a Chinese propaganda machine, obviously. Let me show you my old TikTok account. And I'll scroll through and it'll be me dancing to a Drake song. What are y'all doing at home, man? Just lots of house cleaning? Is that it? Everyone's just cleaning and watching Netflix, I guess. I mean, that's what I'm doing. Grocery shopping, cleaning, and Netflix. Trying to find ways to play poker remotely. Looking for mobile poker apps. Let me tell you, I spent way too much time on that the other day. Still don't have a solution. Man, I have played more Yahtzee over the last 10 days than any human being should endure. My brother and I have just been playing epic games of Yahtzee, just back to back to back, tournament style. Like, it's getting really serious. It's to the point, you know, board games are supposed to be social. When you play a board game, you're supposed to speak to one another. That's the whole point of a board game. It's supposed to be an icebreaker. Once you get to the point when you're playing a board game and you don't speak to the other person, you've played too much of that board game. Once you become Tiger Woods at the back nine in Augusta, you know, and you're not speaking to your opponents, you're just locked in, ready to get an eagle on the 15. When you're doing that while playing Yahtzee, you need a life. We have gone through so many scorecards. We're printing our own Yahtzee scorecards, and we're just churning through them. Because what else is there to do? What else can you do, right? I watched The Outsider on HBO. That was a lot of fun. I got to find a new TV show to binge. Oh, I've been watching all these movies that have come out. Watched Onward and The Hunt back to back yesterday. I'll be talking about that on Movie Hall of Fame later this week. But it's really crazy. It's crazy when sports goes away. It is unbelievable to me. Because obviously I'm a fairly avid sports fan, and I watch a lot of sports, and I watch a lot of sports talk, and sports is a big part of my life, and I think I've always known that. But for some reason, I didn't fully grasp how important sports was until they all went away. Like, I used to complain the Sunday after the Super Bowl, oh man, it's the worst day of the year, no more football, but then baseball comes around in a couple weeks, and March Madness happens, and everything's fine. Like, I'm overstating it. There's still NBA games every other night. And now there is no basketball. There is no baseball. The Olympics were just pushed a year. And it's not that I miss the games per se. It's that I miss the dialogue surrounding the games. I miss sports talk radio. I miss checking box scores. I miss watching LeBron highlights on Twitter. Like, that's what I miss. I miss the culture around the games. Because obviously, there is a lot of television that we no longer have because sports aren't on the air. We are missing out on 5 to 6 to 7 hours of television a week. We can't watch Charles and Shaq and Ernie and Kenny talk about the NBA on TNT. We can't watch March Madness. We can't fill out our brackets and compete against our friends. We can't gamble. You know how difficult that is for me? You can't gamble on anything. And that's all true. But some of that other stuff, the conversation, the debate, the written word surrounding sports, that's a 24-hour machine that just keeps churning out content. And when you get rid of the games, we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel for content. Like, this Tom Brady thing happened. Thank God this Tom Brady thing happened. Because that gave sports talk radio something to talk about for a month. You flip on Colin Cowherd or Mike Francesa or even First Take in the Morning with Stephen A. Smith. All they're talking about is Tom Brady going to the Bucks. Thank God we had that. We desperately needed NFL free agency. Because there is no end to this NBA season in sight. We have to wait another year for the Olympics. The Masters got postponed, for God's sake. We don't get to watch the Masters in April. How sacrilegious is that? We don't have March Madness. So, yes, I am struggling to watch programming at 9 o'clock at night, but I am also struggling to remain sane as sports, The Great Escape, has been put on pause. Like, the world is leaving me few options than to flip on CNN and watch Andrew Cuomo talk about the need for ventilators. You know what I'm saying? The news has become impossible to escape. And yes, it is important to stay informed. And I will continue to watch those press conferences at the White House. And I will continue to read up on the dangers of the coronavirus. But, like, I need something, man. I need something for relief, because all I can do right now is sit at home, record podcasts, watch Netflix, and panic about the end of the world. That being said, if this thing gets better by the summer, which I'm hoping it is, we don't know that. I mean, they keep moving the goalposts on that. I have no idea when we can expect this thing to resolve, and also what a resolution looks like. I mean, that's the confusing thing about it. At what point do we say, all right, everything's good, wash our hands, we're all back to normal? At what point can we, with confidence, restart America again? At what point are we comfortable doing that? At what point does the threat level become low enough? Does the infection rate become low enough? Do hospitalizations become low enough where we are comfortable going back to work and resuming business as usual? I don't know. Hopefully that point comes by the summertime, because this summer, it is going to be just a sports lover's wet dream. It is going to be so delicious. NBA playoffs into August. The Masters in September. The Kentucky Derby in September. MLB regular season, a shortened MLB regular season in the summertime. NHL playoffs in the summertime. Incredible. It will be the greatest sports summer of all time, assuming everything resolves itself. The Olympics would have made it even better. We'll have to wait a year on the Olympics. I'm surprised it took them this long to cancel it. But wow. That run. Because also you have football starting up in September. So that run from August, NBA playoffs, to the Kentucky Derby, to the NFL regular season, to the Masters. Every night you're going to have something to watch. We have to suffer for a couple months, but we're going to get there, sports fans. We're going to get there. I just don't know. I just don't know what the end looks like. Everyone's just very unclear about this. Obviously, there's so much misinformation. And everyone thinks that they know what they're talking about, and they don't know what they're talking about. So we're all getting this secondhand, and we're all watching the same three news stations, and those three news stations often contradict one another. But I just don't know what a healthy America looks like. I don't know what the end looks like. And I'm just really confused about these numbers. Like, the death rate, for example, keeps going down. And that's because more and more tests are becoming available. And this is what was so confusing to me. So that initial number, 3% mortality, an incredibly high number, we were led to believe if 100 million people become infected with the coronavirus, which the model suggested, 3 million people were going to die. And that was the initial premise that we were working off of. Now the death rate has dropped to under 1%. And the reason why that is, if I am interpreting this correctly, is because more tests are becoming available, which means more people are not dying from the coronavirus. In other words, we know the exact number of people that did die because of the coronavirus. That number is almost 600 in America. There, without a doubt, is approximately 600 people that have died of the coronavirus thus far in the United States. The infection number is up to 46,000 today. That, in all likelihood, is not the exact number of infections. Many people suspect that it is 10 to 100 times more than the infection rate suggests. So it's possible that 4 million people have the coronavirus and 600 have died. If you were to calculate that, if you were to take the number of deaths divided by the number of infections, 600 divided by 4 million, I'm not great at math, but that's a pretty infinitesimally small number. So I guess I just assumed when I saw mortality rate and the media reported on the mortality rate as 3%, I assumed that the calculation was not as facile as it actually is. I just assumed that there was more put into the model, that there was more data being taken into consideration, that, for example, scientists and doctors were adjusting for age, that that number was somehow reflective of risk. You know, if more old people were dying because of the coronavirus, but there are less old people in the world than young people, the numbers should be smaller. I thought the mortality rate was the odds that the average American dies of the coronavirus. Not something as arbitrary, or I guess arbitrary is not the word, but facile is really the word. Not something as facile as number of deaths divided by number of confirmed cases. Because obviously that number is inaccurate. Obviously, that number is inaccurate. So we have no way of truly assessing the risk here. To say that it's a 1% mortality rate is actually misleading. That's a horribly misleading number. Because the odds that you die of the coronavirus are not 1%. They're much smaller. So I don't know, man. I'm really just confused. I'm mad at everybody. I'm mad at both sides of the political aisle. I'm mad at those that choose to lie to us and don't have our best interests at heart. I am I'm mad at everything, and I'm confused. And I sit at home doing this podcast, and we're all in the same boat, I suppose. Unsure if we're going to be able to pay rent. Unsure if we can afford groceries. Unsure if we'll ever go back to work, unsure if our kids will ever go back to school. And it's a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing. The world is changing, people. The world is changing in front of our eyes. And this is something that we're going to be talking about for years and years and years. This is going to be something with potentially a decade-long impact. A decade-long tail. Who knows? Until then, I continue to do podcasts every day because that's what you crave here on TooManyThoughtsMedia.com, TMT.media for short. I hope you're all doing well. I hope you're washing your hands. I hope you stay healthy. I hope you stop hugging grandma, for God's sake. Stay away from your grandmother. Wave to her through the glass and go home. You don't want to talk to her anyway. Come on. You don't want to talk anyway, because then it turns into a 4-hour ordeal. Take this opportunity. And this is an opportunity afforded very seldomly in life. Take this opportunity to ignore your goddamn grandparents. I mean, call them, but then pretend that you're breaking up because you have a big signal or a bad signal. You know, they don't know the difference. Anything else we got? I think I'm good. I think I'm tapped out today. I just wanted to check in on you, make sure you were doing okay. I haven't done an eco show in a while, and I may do more because like the world of pop culture has sort of grinded to a halt. We're still talking about movies on Why Is This a Thing and Movie Hall of Fame, and because those shows are not time specific. They are not current event shows, but Cultured, I think, has... we're kind of running out of material on that podcast. Maybe I'll put one up this week talking about the movie industry and at-home video rental. But for now, I think Cultured is going to become semi-infrequent. So, yeah, I may do more of these. I mean, I'm sitting at home most of the day. None of my friends will talk to me. So, why not do more podcasts? And we'll try some fun stuff. We'll experiment on here a little bit. I vow to not do a single TikTok at the expense of this podcast. You know what I mean? I'm committed to churning out the audio content you so crave. So I love you very, very much. Hang in there. Stay away from Yahtzee if you can. Or just play a little less of it. clean the house, work out. I've been doing some at-home workouts in the basement. It's been going all right. Got to stay in shape. Got to wail on the pecs. You know what I mean? Ain't no rest for the wicked, baby. GTL, as the situation once said. Got to stay at it. So yeah, work out, hang out, and I love you. I love you so very, very much. And I do hope that you come back soon, because you know what happens next time. Finally, at the end of the world, I'm going to tell you the story of Lord Steve. I'll see you then.